Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And basketball analysis with over 70 years combined experience. This is the Bob Ryan and Jeff Goodman podcast.
NBA, some college, a little bit of everything.
You know, what can I say? But it wasn't going to happen here with him. I was okay with it because it wasn't about talent, I didn't think.
All right, let's get right to it.
Okay, folks, it's time to rock and roll. You got it with Big Bad Bob Ryan and Jeff Goodman here, CLNS with the podcast, Tangway Along for the Ride. We got to tell you that Bet Online makes this show possible. Football might be over, but basketball is in full steam with both pro and college hoops. Of course, during this podcast, we know that Jeff Goodman is looking down at all his college stats and college stuff. That's how talented he is. Latest odds, totals, player performance, and props. Just go to Bet Online. It's the number one spot for all your betting needs. Head over to the website now and receive your 50% welcome bonus for your first deposit. Just use the promo code CLNS50 to get started. Not just basketball, BetOnline is hockey, boxing, UFC, everything you need, plus Vegas casino games. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to wager your favorite sports and play your favorite games. BetOnline, where the game starts. Okay, where the game starts right now, guys, I'm going to open up the floor regarding the Celtics. And Jeff, I'll start with you. The Celtics are finally living up to their expectations. We are based in Boston. I have been listening to Boston Sports Radio, and my God, people have lost their mind. They are finally doing what they're supposed to do. But now people are saying they're going to the finals. Pump your brakes. Okay, yeah, pump your brakes on the Celtics. All right, we've seen this tease before, Jeff. We've seen it before. I know Bob's going to say that, but we've seen it before.
We have, but it's just such a huge disparity from what we've seen over the last 2 years to what we've seen now over the last month. And you know, again, now kind of the national landscape is taking notice because they've been the best team in the NBA over the last month or so. So you've got to look at it and why. And I was actually texting with Jason Tatum last night a little bit about that. And I asked him, I said, why? Like, I haven't, you know, obviously I'm covering a lot of college right now too. So I haven't seen every game. I've seen some, but he said, like, we're whole now. You know, we're whole. We're healthy. We haven't really seen this team in 2 years. He's right, but it's still unbelievable to me. There's more to it than that. And I wonder how much the criticism finally wore on these guys because they're moving the ball now. And they were moving it even before Derek White got there, but they're moving it even better now that Derek White's there. And they're more efficient. Marcus Smart, it starts with him. Jason Tatum is moving the basketball as well. And they're fun to watch. They went from being absolutely painful to watch to being fun to watch practically overnight. It's hard to understand.
I'm going to go all Larry David on you. I am trying to curb my enthusiasm. and I don't listen to talk radio all that much. I've listened more this week than I have in a long time. And the major reason being my satellite radio has been disrupted, and so I have no choice. Anyway, I'll get that fixed because I can't live this way
without it
much longer. I've often said I wouldn't back out of the driveway without my satellite radio, and now I have a problem. Now, what did I say to you guys a month ago? Beginning of February, I said, show me a good month, and then maybe we can talk.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm the guy that at the beginning of the year, after two or three games, said, this team is annoying. This is an annoying team because the way they're playing, and we know they should be capable of better, but they're not doing it, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Couple things. Jeff, obviously, Jason's allusion to the being whole was obvious. Yes. It's not just that, but it is that it starts with that. This is the group. This is the core group, the starting five plus. The starting five, because the bench, we're going to talk about that, is whole. it starts with Marcus. You're right. Marcus Smart, who I unilaterally said, look, he's made me a lot of things, and you know I'm a member of the fan club. I have been from
you love him. Love
but
him.
But I said he's not a point guard. So let's not kid anybody. Guess what he's been in the last month?
A point guard.
He has done it. It's like, all right, I'll stop taking the dumb threes, and we don't need them. And
how much was it them hearing it? Like, do you actually think, because, I mean, they were so mediocre for so long. Do you think Marcus Smart, maybe Ime got to him. Maybe the new staff got to him. Maybe it was everywhere he went or listened to him hearing people say, he's not. I don't know. I don't know what it was with these guys. Know,
but it's happened.
Yeah.
And he's acted as a point guard. And the games he's taken 7-8 shots, gotten 8-9 assists. It's just he's been and then without sacrificing what's made him Marcus Smart, that je ne sais quoi recklessness on defense that
right.
You know and aggression that makes him a superior defensive player. And sets him apart from almost anybody in the league, in my opinion, in that regard, at that position. It's all we're getting the full package with him now. Okay,
yep.
All right, Tatum. It's so self-evident. We know what's Tatum is calibrate. My word, I love the word calibration. I always said that calibration. When you have that kind of range of skill, when you possess the range of skill that he possesses, which is a gift given to only a select few, particularly at that size, at 6'10". The game, you can do a lot of things. And the trick is when do you not do what you can do? When do you realize that there's four other guys? And it's a game of psychology as well as talent and skill. When do you have to meld into what the other and consider the impact of what you're doing on with the other guys? Michael Jordan, it took him a while to figure this out on the NBA level. Trust me, he didn't win until he figured it out. That's my contention. It's not automatic, you know? And Tatum has finally got the first full calibration. He's got this range of skill. He can make the three. He can go to the basket. Now he can pass the ball. And even in the fourth quarter on Sunday in that magnificent game, and I mean it was a magnificent NBA product game in which he was the star. Even in that game in the fourth quarter, he didn't take every shot he could have taken. He's matured.
He's trusting his teammates. When he gets doubled, he makes the pass. When he doesn't, he eats up anybody for the most part, one-on-one.
Now, my question is, well, how do we – what to what do we attribute the rebirth of Al Horford, who has been playing Al Horford 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, lately, this month.
You know why? He didn't play a ton last year. You know, remember, Oklahoma City was so bad that I don't think they wanted him back because they wanted to lose games.
He sat down, right? They sat him down. Yes. He went along with it, right?
Right. So he really didn't age much last season. And Al Horford is not based on athleticism. That's not his game, right?
Right.
He's finesse. He's up here. That's Al Horford's right. His biggest asset is this. And he adds a passing element on the court when a lot of teams don't have it at that position.
Right.
He also adds such a cerebral defensive element that again, he can make up for other people's mistakes because he's generally always in the right. I shouldn't say generally always, but he's most of the time in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, but don't you think, guys?
We weren't seeing this in November and December,
right? But I think
we're lamenting that Al is probably Al's on the way out.
Yeah,
and suddenly Al is a vital component in this story that we're telling here. Why?
I'll tell you why, because I think that Al at this stage of his career can't drive a team on his own. But if the bus is going full tilt, you know, he could jump on and be a key asset, you know, and I think that's it, Bob. And let's put yourself in Al Horford's shoes. If things are going well, if guys are playing, you know, they were playing like a bunch of eggheads in November. Yeah. He's like, what am I going to do about it? You know, he just mails it in and says, this is it. If Tatum and everybody else is buying in, then Horford goes, okay, now this is worth my time to do it. That's what I think. But he's not at the stage of his career where he's going to carry a team.
Oh, no.
He needs to be a piece of it. So if the other guys are doing it, then he buys in.
I also wonder how much it just took this group. I mean, remember, the one thing we didn't do. Listen, we panicked. I know I panicked. And again, said they should look at trading Jaylen Brown. I've said that multiple times.
I still think they should, but that's another story.
I just said they should look at it. That's all I said. I said, you can't get rid of him for nothing here, but if you can bring in another all-star caliber player. Absolutely, you should look at it. But I think what we didn't do here, at least, was say, hey, Ime Udoka, you know, isn't the right guy. I think we both agreed, and we all agreed, that he needed more time to be able to see if he could get to this group. And that, like, part of it is, listen, NBA coaching these days, part of it is being a psychologist, right? Okay. Like, that's what you have to be. And I think more than anything.
Phil Jackson was.
Right, right.
Big part. Okay, now let's get to the fifth guy, the Time Lord.
Yeah.
We always said, what were we saying for over the last 2 years? He's nice, but we got to keep him on the floor.
Right. Unreliable.
I'm knocking on my wooden desk here.
Yes, which you should.
We're seeing how good he can be right now.
Yeah. No, he's a freak. Well, he's a freak athletically.
Yeah, I mean, to me, if they ever get to the number one spot in the East, and we're going to get to where they are in the hierarchy, he's the key, I think. Yeah, because I think with Tatum and Brown, you're always, and they're playing to their potential, you're always going to be maybe the third or the fourth best team if the teams in the East remain as constituted. Time Lord is the one guy more, to me.
I want one more guy that's a third, Milwaukee. Milwaukee has three to me. They've got three high-level, all-star caliber players. Obviously, Giannis being the big one, but Middleton's a great sidekick because he doesn't care, you know, to get the attention. Jaylen Brown can be that for Tatum, and then they have Jrue Holiday. That's the difference for me.
Well, maybe the Time Lord could be the third guy, but that to me, unless they make a deal.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if he can, he's still, you know, again, he's still obviously got a long way to go. But he's so unique, and again, there aren't a lot of guys like him, even like in the East. You look around and you're like, there just aren't a lot of bigs that can match up with Robert Williams and what he can do, especially in the defensive end.
In your opinion, Bob, if he shows up every night, because to me, that's the thing with this team. We've been through this before, right? We've seen the tees before. We've seen Tatum go through stretches where he's put up in 50 and single-handedly won games. Maybe it's different now because he's distributing the ball more. But if Time Lord becomes that everyday guy, can they be the best team in the East?
I think that's not the whole story. They need something else. They're not going to be the best team in the East. I don't think still they're going to be a real problem for people. There's no question.
Right.
I will get to what I think they need, you know, but he's good enough. He's what he fits in beautifully with this group. He is exactly a type of player that they have almost never had. And he's fine.
They still need one more shooter.
We don't think it's going to be Nick Stauskas. We'll get a shot, I guess. We'll see.
He could shoot the shit out of it, but no, I don't think.
Something just occurred to me, guys, that I hadn't thought about let's give Danny Ainge some credit here. We're talking about four number one draft picks on this starting five.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, and I think Jeff knows, Jerry knows, we all know, that's highly unusual that in this, the teams are put together in a mix and match way often, always. And we have to go back 50 years. The Celtics at one point, I'm just telling you, at one point in the early 70s, they did start five number ones. Okay. Wow. There was Cowens, Havlicek, Sanders, White, and Cheney. They started when Satch was still a starter. Really? Okay. And so up to the 1971-72 season, they were starting five number ones, which was, I made a big deal out of it at the time because it's not done.
No,
it
no,
isn't
now,
the way it works.
Now, well, never done. Never done.
Now, no. We've got a team. I don't have the time or effort or interest to look to research the 32 teams right now, but it's a telling task for somebody. I wonder how many teams even start three number ones, let alone four. And certainly nobody's starting five.
So, and now their bench Danny, looks better.
Let's give Danny a belated thank you. Okay,
all right, Danny, good job, Danny.
People have been dumping on Danny for various things, and some of them stupidly. Danny, a belated thank you for that.
Okay. But now let's get to where they are. This is a reality check here.
Yeah,
because you know, let's go through the East. Some people don't believe in Miami, but they're still hanging around. They're still there, and they are.
You gotta believe in them.
They are tough, man. They're really
and all
tough.
The people coming back. What a good game.
But Harden, you know, Harden's got these guys off to a great start. He's running in the stands. Harden is engaged. I mean, God bless the Celtics, but I just don't see them beating Miami. I don't see him beating Philly. I don't see him beating Miami. I don't see him beating Milwaukee in the playoffs. Bob, your thoughts.
I wouldn't pick them to beat any of those three teams. It would, but I don't think they get steamrolled by those teams either. I don't think that they get swept or losing five. I think they put up a fight. And look, we didn't get to the bench thing. Jeff's right. They're still a player short, right. a meaningful player short of being at the level of those other three teams, in my opinion. Can we just back up a set and talk about the bench? We might as well, right? Okay.
Bob, go ahead.
All right, Derek White, you know, is a wonderful addition. There's no question.
Yeah. Love him. Love him.
But, you know, I keep waiting for Pritchard to really assert himself on a consistent basis. It's a big three in the fourth quarter the other day, but in one shot. He had one fail. That was the one field goal of the game. How good is he still? I don't know. And then we get to who's our coming off the bench? Oh, come on, I'm forgetting my daughter brain fart.
Bill Gaskis has got to come off the bench.
Yeah, all right. I bet it's not a strong bench. Let's put it.
No, it's not. I mean, those guys like Nesmith and all those guys. Everybody keeps waiting for.
Oh, Nesmith, give up.
You're talking. Did you forget Tice?
Daniel Tice is very good in certain circumstances.
Yeah.
Or useful, not all circumstances. And I still like having him on the team. He's good for their defense. He helps their switching defense. He can step out and make a three.
He's okay. He's a role player. Their bench is not great. Their bench is not great. It's not great.
We need a guy, but we don't have, you know, the days of, you know, the idea of a six-man candidate. They only have a seventh-man candidate, let alone a six. Oh, yeah, they do with White. White would be a seventh-man candidate if they had a seventh-man award. But anyway, the bench needs bullshit.
White's a good six man. I think their top six are good, and Grant Williams has played well enough.
Oh, Grant Williams, God, I don't want to diss him. He's been helping. Right. Is this the ceiling? Is this what we're going to get?
Yeah.
You think, Jeff? This is who he's going to be.
Well, wait.
Yes. No, I was ready to get rid of him.
I'm not ready to say this is. Listen, the dude is shooting 44% from three. Yeah, 44. I know most of them are uncontested.
Well,
but 44 is, if he can shoot 40 for three in the next few years, you would be absolutely ecstatic. But again, he was not known as a shooter. He works his ass off. He's gotten better. We'll see if this is kind of a one-time deal, or he can follow up on this for his career.
I mean, he may be the Bruce Bowen of the Celtics. So
No, they're not on the level of those other three.
They're a player away, and it doesn't have to be an all-star player away. That's my take, is they've got to still upgrade. And really, it probably comes down to, like, Horford, because he's getting older. You know, what happens next year if they move on him? You only have to pay him half his salary next year, so he's expendable. I love him in the locker room. I love him as a piece coming off the bench. But if you could somehow, really, if you're putting White in there, you go White, Smart, Jalen, Tatum, Robert Williams, Horford coming off the bench with Grant Williams, and you add one more bona fide guard, like maybe two, really, because I'm not sold Pritchard's like the answer at the backup point guard spot either.
He's not.
Right. He's fine. He's fine.
I wish he were, you know, but yeah. I can't go there. We can't.
No, he's probably not. You need somebody – to me, who's a little bit bigger, stronger, more proven. So if you add that and one more, just a spot-up shooter, those are the two things for my bench that I would need in the offseason to be able to feel better about this team without adding a big-time all-star or anything like that, taking a few steps forward to maybe compete with those other teams.
What I'm curious to see now, you know, they went to the trouble of signing scouts. Stauskas. Is he going
to? Stauskas, yeah. You know where he went to high school, right? You know where he went to prep school?
Brewster? Guessing.
St. Mark's in Southboro.
St. Mark's?
Coming home.
Wow. I didn't know
that basketball factory, St. Mark's.
It was for a little while. They put Eric Murphy, Nate Lubick. They put out some dudes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I want to see if he's going to have any effect at all.
Well, he's got an opportunity. Yeah. Let's put it this way, because they, you know,
That was the job that Aaron Nesmith was supposed to fulfill, and he hasn't done it.
All right, so I want to talk about one other team now in the East. So is Brooklyn going to figure it out, Bob?
Well, first of all, are they going to figure it out? The Simmons, in their fantasy world, is that Simmons somehow gets to play, and he is what they hoped he was going to be for them. That would change. It's hard. We need to see it. What role could Simmons play? If he doesn't play any role, no, they're not a factor. I don't think. And if he can play the role that they foresee, they might be a factor. But I don't think they're a factor right now.
I think the last I heard was that there's a chance he comes back on the 16th in Orlando. Okay. So I don't know if I don't think it's even out there, but, and I'm not sure if it happens, but that's the hope, is he comes back the 16th, which would give him, what have they played? They played 65 games right now. They're in that ninth spot. 65 games would put it at how many more games are you going to miss? So miss the Philly game, 66, 67, 67 games. So he's got, what does that give him? 15 games.
15 games. I don't know.
I mean, it's not ideal, but again, you want to play them if they're, you know, they get Ben Simmons back and they're the eight, let's say, at the end of the day, and you're the Miami Heat. Do you want to see them?
No.
No, you don't want to see them, but I'm not afraid either. The Celtics were at the point where I'm not afraid. I don't expect them to win, but I don't know. That team, I don't know.
Listen, if I'm the Celtics, I'd rather have the matchup with the Chicago Bulls in the 4-5 game than get all the way up to one and go see KD, Kyrie, and Ben Simmons.
There's no question. The X factor is Irving, right? I mean, all of a sudden, what if the guy put – you don't know. I mean,
well, the X factor then becomes Ben Simmons.
Well, Ben Simmons, you're right. But let's – hear me out, guys. But even if you're in a series, right – and we know what Kevin Durant can do. We saw him do it in the playoffs before, where he single-handedly – I mean, I think one of his greatest feats was with the Nets last year, I think. I can't keep track of stuff.
Yeah.
Where he single-handedly carried this team.
Sure.
Right? You know, where I thought it was one of his greatest feats, even better than when he was with Golden State, because Harden had too many donuts. Kyrie was MIA. And Durant – so Durant can do that. Like, people talk about Tatum going head-to-head to Durant. Okay, slow your roll, man.
Okay, Durant can put it – yeah,
KD's, you know, like, I hate that.
He's still at a different level because KD does it every single night.
That's my point with Tatum, and that's why I get frustrated. When Tatum does it every single night, then we could talk about that.
Yeah.
But like, if Durant gets rolling and Kyrie decides to get on the reservation, they're very dangerous.
Yeah, and it's a total X factor because the mayor of New York, Eric Adams, can't unilaterally, apparently, we learned, lift the mandate. But he wants to. So whatever hoops he has to go through to do it, he's to proclaim himself to be a fan. He wants Kyrie on the lineup, but he can't. He doesn't have the power to do it. So, but they're holding out hope. Sean Marks and company holding out hope that it's going to happen. And if it happens, then you know that's going to be very, very interesting. Well, if it doesn't happen.
I hope it does. I hope it does for the sake of the game.
It's going to be the strangest circumstance in the history of American sport. A team hoping that they can play on the road.
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, listen, we all know how people in Boston feel about Kyrie, but if Kyrie's playing in every game, man, I mean, it's better.
Yeah.
They get
Ben Simmons back. Like, I feel like, again, like the talent isn't even close when you're looking at the Miami Heat and the Brooklyn Nets if they have KD,
right?
Kyrie, and Ben Simmons. Those are three of the top 25 talents in the NBA. Maybe three of the top 15 talents in the NBA.
Well, I'm still
– I know you are with Ben. I know you're not putting him in the top 25 because he can't shoot.
Well, I certainly can't put him in the top 15.
Yeah, that's fair.
I might listen to an argument for 25, although I probably would disdain it.
Here's what I love about Ben Simmons in Brooklyn is the one thing that you can't hammer KD on, and people hammer him on certain things, is KD is all about – ball and video games. Like, he's not going out partying. He just wants to get in the gym and work. So if there's somebody that's going to rub off on Ben Simmons, and Kyrie has really changed. Kyrie's a guy that in Cleveland, the big knock on him was he loved to party, loved to go out. Really doesn't go out as much anymore from what I'm told. And again, loves ball. So like those two guys, if they can get Ben Simmons in the gym every day, just shooting the ball over and over and over with them, if anybody can do it, and I know we said, well, if anybody can do it, Doc Rivers can do it and get Ben to shoot the ball. But now I'm going with players because if Ben has respect for anybody, it should be Kevin Durant as much as on the offensive end. I mean, come on.
All right, now let's
talk just briefly a little Durant. I hope that fans appreciate how good he is.
I hope enough fans do that and
how historically great he is. And how there are certain guys that I've observed over the years that I say the game just flows out of them. The game is just an extension of them. The game is logical to them. The game makes sense to them. He is the ultimate example of it that I've ever seen. He makes it look so damn easy. And you know that the hours that went into that, imagine, you know.
Well, up in here's what I'll say, Bob. I saw the first time I ever saw him was in Lewis, Delaware. I think it was Lewis, Delaware at a tournament. And he was a sophomore in high school. And he was probably, I don't know, 6'8", 150 pounds. And I'm telling you, the shot looked there. It was still there. It was like you saw this kid and you were like, holy shit. Like, I can't believe what I'm seeing. He was so skinny. And he's still, I mean, skinny.
Did either of you join me in having a momentary flashback on Sunday in that fourth quarter when they went back and forth and he and Tatum had a couple of exchanges, I think two exchanges, you know, boom, 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 boom. And to a certain game in 1988, a game seven against the Hawks.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say,
had a momentary
flashback. Bernie Dominique.
Yeah. You know, that's the ultimate example of the shootout, you know, thing. Because they went at one point in that game, guys, three exchanges at one point, matching baskets in the fourth quarter, if maybe even four, but they did three, I know. And it was, but anyway, I'm watching, I'm going, my God, he makes it look so easy. The other thing I thought of, the famous John Wooden line, be quick, but don't hurry. I said, John Wooden's up in the sky going, that's what I'm talking about. That guy. he's all right. So that's my little ode to KD. God, don't take him for granted, folks. He's a wonderful player.
One player who's having a tough time. I want to start with Bob on this because he has seen the evolution of social media. But
Bob's also a social media savant.
At the time, you know, when Bob started in this business, I believe family and Jeff and I both agree families are off the radar. Russell Westbrook's wife is taking abuse on social media. He's had to defend his family. And unfortunately, it's the life we live in. And I mean, I take a ton of heat on Twitter. I don't care. But nobody goes after my family. You know, Bob, that's the era we live in.
This is one. Look, the social media thing is the number one reason, one of the many at the top of the list, not the only thing. It's the top of the list of the reasons why coaching today in all levels, and starting in college anyway, I don't know about how it goes on in high school. I should know. Probably it's harder in high school in certain areas.
Worse in high school. My son knows more about high school players than NBA players.
I should know better than to have said that because of I covered high school sports, and I know what dealing with the high school parents is like, and it's the worst at times for – okay. Social media has changed the landscape, the way people grow up and this whole generation has grown up with it and they have to deal with it. You're absolutely right. There's circumstances that people have to live with in sports and I'm sure in everything else, entertainment, that politics that you didn't have to do 10, 20, 30, or certainly not 30 years ago. No, it's horrible. And it's outrageous. When I say people, you know, people can be scumbags and
here's the quote of the pod, Bob Ryan. People can be scumbags.
Yeah, like, put it on the headline.
It's completely true.
Well, it's gutless. They call Westbrook. Jeff and I were talking, Bob. You know, if you want to call West, you know, you yell at Westbrook and you say Westbrick. You yell it from the stands and you put it on Twitter. That's fair game, right?
Yeah, that's fine.
But the family, just leave the families out of it.
No, it's awful. There's no excuse for it. There's no defense for it. It's outrageous. The fact that this is the world we live in, this opportunity exists. It wouldn't exist if social media didn't exist, but it does. And I always go back to the famous Jimmy Durante line where Jimmy Durante, everybody wants to get into the act. Well, everybody can get into the act now in terms of making your opinions known to the world at large. In a way you could not do 30 years ago.
To me, again, here's my easy rule on this is, you know, you can call whether it's a media person, whether it's an athlete, whether it's a coach. I mean, on social media, you can kind of call them whatever you want, names, as long as it's not derogatory. You want to call me whatever you want. It's fine. I don't really care. But the moment you bring like my daughter, and people have brought my daughter into it and gone at her on social media, you're done. You're done. I'm going to find out who you work for. And I'm going to make sure they see that tweet, period.
Right.
And, you know, you go after Russell Westbrook and call him Westbrook. It is what it is, Russ. Like, listen, is it an ideal? No. I mean, this is the way fans are. But the moment they go after Russ's family in any way, I don't blame them. I don't blame them. That's bullshit. That should never, ever, ever happen.
Well, man, it's no recourse.
No, they're hiding behind the keyboard. I had a kid. I was at Texas Tech a month ago, and this kid had been killing me on Twitter, and he's messaging me that he's 10 rows behind me, right behind me. Look back. I want to, you know, killing me. And then I want to take a picture with you. And I finally responded to him. I said, no effing way. So I turned back. And this kid's, he's like 21 years old, giving me the finger. I actually give him credit because at least he was there doing it.
Yeah.
Where most guys would have done it, you know, anonymously. But I'm like, this is what it comes to now. It's like, it's so bad. I mean, social media, the bad outweighs the good so much on social media.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And you can't go back, unfortunately.
Right. No.
It's a great way to gain information, but you know what? You know, my son, actually, I give him credit. He puts his phone down like for 10 hours a day.
He's really?
He said, yeah, he did it. It was something at school. There was a project at school, or a teacher, a guidance counselor said, you know, everybody, why don't you try just putting it away?
Great.
And he did. And he says, you know what? Life is a lot better.
Yeah, I try to do it on vacation.
You can't. It's your job. That's the problem. Right.
That's why I go when I take vacations. Honestly, I try to go overseas because of the time difference.
Right.
So that way for like 6 hours, I know I can't, you know, I might look at it in the morning and then there's no sense in even looking at it. Nobody's awake back home. So that's kind of the goal with it. That's why honestly, I think getting out of the country is better. All right. What do we got next?
Okay. We're going next. Let's talk about Pop. Bob wants to praise Pop a little bit. Don Nelson, as Pop ties as at the time of this recording, Don Nelson's all time winning record.
Well, Pop, first of all, Don, he once was assistant for Don with Don Nelson. In fact, the first time I met Pop was at Runyon's in New York after a game.
Really?
And he was Nelly's assistant. Anyway.
Shocking. Shocking. Those guys were at Runyon's. Shocking.
I know. It's a wonderful story. Here's a guy, Air Force Academy, did his service time. The wonderfully unsubstantiated rumor that I truly want to believe that among his things during his service time was he could have been a spy. I love that one. I want that to be true. A wine connoisseur, a certified unophile, coached at Cal Poly Pomona Pitzer.
Yeah.
All right. And a Division III coach. And then he becomes this guy, that is going to break the record. He's tied now. He did it last night. He tied it, and he's going to break. It's an interesting path, and he's an interesting guy. He's his own man, if there ever was one. He's outspoken. He doesn't give a damn.
Did he become that way, Bob, after he won? Because I feel like now it's almost like this, you know, where he does these interviews and he'll give these one word answers that to some people are funny, but to me, it gets old a little bit, how kind of gruff he is. Was he always that way or no?
I don't know for sure. When I met him, it was a nice social moment. And so I don't know. I don't know. I wasn't around him enough to ever know. Anyway, I just think it's worth commenting. It's an amazing achievement. And to get there, guys, to get there among the achievements, 18 consecutive 50 win years.
Wow.
Six of them 60. And, you know, you got to, you know, with all the changeover now, did he have the benefit as often in a Brady Belichick kind of way? Was serendipity for him to have as his best player a guy that was so completely compatible for him and vice versa? And Tim Duncan, of course, they were perfectly suited for each other.
Yeah.
And that worked out very well. But they're very lucky to have each other. And I'm sure that Duncan would have been put off by an awful lot of coaches in this league over the years.
Yep.
And, And he was worried that he never had to worry once for 1 second about Tim Duncan and his approach to his job and as his best player. So that worked out very, very well. Anyway, and five championships, but he should have had one more. Why wasn't Duncan on the floor, you know, and for that, get that rebound that the Ray Allen wound up making that shot. They would have won another one. But anyway, no one's perfect. You know, no one's perfect, but anyway, my salute to Pop.
Well, I want to say something, Bob, before we wrap up on Pop. Is to me, I think the greatest testament to him is I thought when Duncan left, he was done. But he still wants to coach. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I look at the Spurs now and I go, Pop, why are you even bothering?
Yeah, he's 72, not good. And they're in a teardown stage now. And I don't know either, right? He's 72.
Well, he loves the game. I mean, that's my thing. That's my thing. It's just like, you know what? Like, you sit there. It's very easy to coach and do that when you have Tim Duncan and everything's going great. Yeah. But my compliment to him is he loves the game so much, he's not leaving.
Maybe he wants to bring him back and show the world he can. I don't know. But you're right.
He just loves the game. So he
you wonder how much was the record. Well, you wonder how much of it was getting the record.
And although, you know, he'll claim it doesn't mean a thing to him. But you know, well, I can't believe that he isn't proud to have beaten him. You know, I don't think. So,
all right, guys, before we wrap up, we have to talk about another coach. Jeff Goodman was there for Mike Krzyzewski's swan song final regular season game. He's still got a ways to go here. But how weird was it, though, Jeff? I mean, they lost, and the first thing he says was that was unacceptable, and they're supposed to celebrate it. That's weird.
Yeah, it was weird. The whole deal was weird because, you know, again, the game was kind of an afterthought, right? Nobody even thought Carolina had a chance because this Carolina team's been absolutely awful and they were on the bubble going into that game. And, you know, you look up with 5 minutes left and then 2 minutes left, you're like, oh, my God, like they're really going to lose this game. And then it was for me, Bob, I can't wait to see how Kay reacts because that's kind of like that was the intrigue. There was really not a lot of intrigue leading up to the game. Again, it was how many points Duke was going to win by. And then, so Kay goes in the locker room after the game. And I asked Paolo Banchero this afterwards. I said, what did he say? He said, he basically said, it was an embarrassing performance. You know, we didn't show any fight. And then he comes back out 15 minutes later. He walks back out in the court. They've got everything set up, right? I mean, there was going to be a huge ceremony. The president speaks, somebody from the city. They do these scholarships in the family's honor, his daughters, his 10 grandkids, everybody's there. Wife comes out holding his wife's hand and she sits down. He grabs the mic and he says, this is impromptu. I just want to apologize. That was embarrassing.
No, unacceptable.
Unacceptable. I'm sorry. Unacceptable. And his family's kind of yelling at him then. And he's like, no, no, no. Let me go. Let me talk. And it kind of came across as kind of an asshole at that point. It really did. But I think he was so upset and so frustrated at that point. It was still heat in the moment. I honestly don't know if he took enough time after talking to his team in the locker room.
It was unacceptable on two levels and two reasons. One, it was unacceptable to say that. Save it for the locker room. You don't embarrass the kids after that. I'm sorry. You just don't do that. Save it for the locker room. Air him out. And what he should have done, and I expected him to do. I'm truly.
I know what you're going to say.
Salute Carolina for playing a great game.
He did it later.
And pay homage to the rivalry and how appropriate it was that, you know, it does not speak to the rivalry that, you know, that what they just did here to show you, you know, this best of all college sports.
Records mean nothing. Rivalry. Right.
And then go from there. That's what he should have done.
He did it in the media. He was awesome. Not good. He was incredible to the media after the ceremony was done.
But and he was too late. He came off as the angry old man thing instead
of. But you know what? You guys are both right. And I agree with you. But it doesn't matter. It just goes to show. And Jeff, I think Jeff is right in that he should have taken some time. He should have cooled off longer.
Yeah, decompressed.
But it just goes to show. And I noticed the same. Where's Pitino coaching now? Is he at Iona?
Iona.
Yes. Right. Okay. You can have all the sneaker deals. You can have all the speeches. You can get paid $1 million to speak. You know, you can fly around on a private jet. You can have all this, but like guys like Krzyzewski, and I thought about Pitino when he took the Iona job, to their core, they're coaches. And coaches are kind of, they're kind of pricks.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I mean, they, you kind of, you know.
And he totally can be.
And you got to be. And you, so like, you guys are both right. But the thing that like, I appreciate it from it is to the end of the day, that's all these guys are. That if these guys weren't, I mean, it's still why Popovich is coaching. It's like if Krzyzewski wasn't at Duke, he'd be coaching some high school somewhere.
Very true.
You know, I mean, I'll take it from acting because you guys know I love acting. I mean, Bob, I remember they asked Al Pacino, what would you be doing, you know, if you weren't making The Godfather? He said, I'd probably be doing a Shakespeare festival in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what I get out of it. What gets me going and gets me, what inspires me is that guys like Pitino and guys like Krzyzewski, guys like Popovich, at the end of the day, it's who they are. They're just stupid basketball coaches. I find that charming.
I think you're right. I would concede that what you're saying. It's maybe too much to expect anything other than that reaction. That I would have hoped he would have risen to the occasion. He didn't.
Agree, but you guys are right. I mean, I'm not.
No, you're right.
No one's right or wrong here. It's just that's what I took from.
Things go. I got to ask Jeff. Do you think the pressure was too much for those kids?
They were all freshmen. Carolina had nothing to lose. They got off to a good start. They got off to a really good start. That was
11-4. I remember 11-4 early.
Yeah. And then when Duke went in the run, Bacot got his second foul with about, six, 7 minutes. And I watched him. He was pleading to go back in the game. And Hubert wouldn't put him back in with two fouls. And I thought it was over. Duke went in the run then, went up 8-10 points. But they cut it to 2 at half. And I think they went in down 2 saying, like, we played the better half here. We played the better half. There's no reason we can't win. But, yeah, I do. And, man, watching – they did a video coming – again, when he came back on the – you know, he comes on the court. He does his impromptu thing, and then they play a video. And I'm literally right across from Duke's bench looking at their players – they're not even looking at that. They look like they just got knocked out of the NCAA tournament. They look like their season was over. The players are staring in this space. Really? And again, it was all kind of surreal, guys. It was all a little bit. Well, the coolest part for me was watching all the players, 96 players, go out before the game started and K walk in between them. Mm-hmm. And I knew a lot of these guys because I covered a lot of them. Even in their recruitments, you know, like J.J. Redick through his recruitment, Kyle Singler I saw afterwards. And, you know, I've known Kyle forever since he was probably 14, 15 years old. A lot of these kids. So it was, Christian Laettner, seeing him there. And I talked to Bobby Hurley like an hour, you know, he had a game that afternoon, so he couldn't go. It was just, I don't know. It was just kind of like, whoa. Like, this really is it. And before the game, John Shire was sitting on the bench by himself about 2 hours before the game, an hour and a half. And I've known John, again, since he was about 15. And I just went up and sat next to him. We talked for about 20 minutes. And I said to him, I'm like how strange is it that you're going to be the next head coach? Like, this is it. The next game at Cameron, you're going to be the head coach. Like, he's 33 years old. Like, this is it for Kay. And he kept saying, the one thing that Kay kept reiterating was, I'm going to be an ambassador. I am not going to be hanging over the program here. I'm not going to be like Jim Calhoun was.
Right.
But Jim Calhoun was different. He was forced out. Jim Calhoun never wanted to leave. Health forced him out. And that's why Kevin Ollie took over. And Jim Calhoun was literally at every practice early. Kay was like, there's no way I'm doing that.
If I'm not mistaken, I may be wrong. John Wooden did the role perfectly. He was a presence, but he was not intrusive. Right.
Yeah, and that's what it should be.
People could see him in the stands, isn't it? But he wasn't a problem at all.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you very much. Always a pleasure. We're never short on opinions.
We are not.
Jeff Goodman, thank you. Bob Ryan, we'll talk to you later, guys.